Well, tonight we pursue our studies in the book of Nehemiah. And this brings us to chapter 5. And so, as we consider the material before us there, the title to go with our thoughts is this: Getting Our Own House in Order. Getting Our Own House in Order. We've seen that the work proceeding, it most certainly is, chapter 3, listed the names of all the different people who were involved, kinds of people, goldsmiths, perfumers, people can come in from Jericho. Some were doing smaller sections, some doing larger. And they were looking to hang the gates as well, all that had been burned with fire. But the opposition had come, and the opposition had followed predictable paths. Begins with, well, accusations of kind, but it's a lot of it is sarcasm, mischief-making, making fun of what's happening. But then it begins to turn a bit nastier, and there is threats of violence, indeed intent to do violence. And Nehemiah begins to have to take up some defensive positions and post guards where the wall still has not been built to a sufficient height, where people could still scale the wall and come in and begin to wreak havoc. He has guards through the night, and the people now also have swords as well as their trowels. That while half of them might be busy doing the wall building, the other half are ready to respond to any attacks. Nehemiah has his man by his side with the trumpet. If there's to be any trouble in any location, they hear the trumpet, they are to rally to that. So the work continues and proceeds. And there the enemies have been disappointed. They hoped their strategies would work. And their annoyance has turned to fury. That's what they see constitutes a threat to them. That were now this city to get strong again, pose a threat to them and their enjoyment, if you will, their quiet enjoyment of things, that they're used to being able to do what they wanted, not have any pushback or opposition from the Jews, but the thought that their morale might return to them, that they might then begin to have ambitions to influence back in the other direction. And that became a matter of great consternation and fear. Well, things, however, within the life of the people building the wall needed some addressing. And so our first heading is this: treating people right. Treating people right. So you got the work taking place on the wall. Got the big threat from outside. But all was not well inside and amongst the behaviour of the people themselves. And there was injustice. There was injustice not being committed here by Sanballat or Tobiah, Horonites and the Ammonites or anybody else, or Geshem the Arab. Artaxerxes causing trouble back home, exercising his influence from Persia for ill, or any of the governors who previously had caused trouble and tried to stop the building work in an earlier stage in their history. This is a problem from within, and the outcry arises from the people and their wives against their Jewish brethren. This was something they'd inflicted upon their fellow brethren. And the outcry is brought to Nehemiah's attention. Well, rightly and wisely so, because the people recognized that he might actually do something about it. Because the situation was not something that happened overnight, but had been a situation in the making over a fair period of time. And Nehemiah had found, well, the morale of the people was rather low. Nobody had thought, well, let's rebuild the walls. Previously, it took him to come all the way from Shushan and for him then to say, well, let's do this. But besides that, the people had allowed a situation to develop that was really quite intolerable. And there was now a great injustice. And it was becoming more acute because of the shortage of food. There was a scarcity. And this famine that was around and about them was creating trouble because there wasn't enough food for the people to live with. And the food, of course, in times of scarcity, the price goes up. There's your basic economics, supply and demand. And things were getting very, very difficult, because already the people had themselves been impoverished by their fellow brethren. We notice verse 8 that Nehemiah talks about how recently they'd just been able to recover things from the nations, that they'd had, oh, perhaps had to borrow money from the nations or had mortgaged their land to them. Some of their tribal allotments, so precious and so much a God-given gift to them and to be prized, but they've been forced to have to mortgage that land, raise some money on it, and then sort of pay back the person who they raised that money from in order to recover their land back, as sort of what they hope will be a temporary measure. Well, anyway, they'd managed to recover the land from the nations to whom they'd mortgaged out the land, but now they'd ended up having to mortgage their land to their fellow believers, or fellow brethren. And so they're back to square one. They're in poverty. They're in difficulty. They're having to pay back money to people. And they're now in great debt. In fact, can't see a way out of that debt. They're having to pay more for their food. Their incomes are dwindling. They can't service the debts that they have got. And they are, some of them already lost their land. We learn in verse 5, they had to sell land to raise money just to survive. Or the land that they've mortgaged, they are unable to service the debt on that. And so the person to whom they've mortgaged it is now taking possession of it. And they're in difficulty. Furthermore, over and beyond that, they're paying interest on their loans, interest on their mortgages. People who have taken the land there and are holding it as the pledge and receiving the payments back, but they're charging usury, a hundredth, as it talks about there. That hundredth is the interest being paid in kind, perhaps with something, the oil or wine or some produce, but it's nevertheless crippling and a great burden upon the people. And they are in great difficulty having to pay back these debts at the same time as food prices are rising, and they're just in a negative spiral. They're just going down and down and down. And it's heartbreaking what we also hear in verse 5. They've had to sell their sons and daughters basically into slavery. That they've given them over to work for various people, richer people, and they've been given some money, sure enough, but they're not in a position to be able to pay, as it were, to have their children brought back again, because they're more and more in debt. And so they're having to say, well, no, you can hold on to our children for, say, another 6 months of work until we've got the money we can pay you to redeem them. But the debt is just stacking and it's becoming impossible. They're now years behind, perhaps, in arrears, and unable to think of their children being able to be brought back, that what they owe in terms of their children's labor to whoever it is that's taken them on just keeps growing and growing. And the money isn't coming in to be able to pay back those debts that they are incurring. And so their children are staying in slavery, in working in sort of bonded service to these rich people and these nobles. They just can't pay the money to release them from that service. Instead, the debt that they owe is just growing and growing, and the amount of time that their children now are having to work to pay off that debt is just growing and growing, and there's no end in sight. And as I've said, verse 7, Nehemiah sees here the issue. It's the nobles and the rulers. They were the people that were allowing this situation, profiting from this situation, enjoying receiving the land, as it were, when the people couldn't service their mortgage debt, or they've had to sell their land, probably at quite a cheap price. So they've done a good old land grab there, got some assets at a cheap price and felt good about that. Or else they're just enjoying the service of these children running around their big homes, stately homes, if you like, fetching, carrying, doing all the menial tasks for them. So they're getting some free labor, and the amount of labor that they're going to get, the benefit of it, just keeps growing and growing, because the people who are in debt to them, their debts just keep growing and growing. And so their children are having to stay longer and longer to pay off that debt in the service that they render, their labor. So their behavior is very poor, very bad. How often it is, isn't it? There, the rich whose behavior is one of greed, uncaring, feeling somehow entitled, and who are quite happy to impoverish other people in the process. Quite heartless, quite without care for their neighbor. But these are the people that they have impoverished, or who they are requiring these debts back, paying interest to them, or having the use of their children's labor. Their fellow countrymen. These are the Jews doing it. This isn't the Persians doing it, or the Samaritans doing it, or the Arabs doing it, or some other nation doing it. They got themselves out of that particular mess. It's their own people who are doing this to them. And so the moment arises to have to address it. And amidst all that they're having to do regarding the walls, which you would think they've got enough on their plates to have to just deal with that. They're having to work round the clock. They're under threat, the danger of attacks from the people who want to stop the work. And now this as well. But Nehemiah recognizes that this is important. They need to get their own house in order. They need to attend to those matters, injustices, matters that need to be put right, issues in the hearts of the rulers and the nobles here that need to be set right. And so for ourselves too, well, we apply this carefully. We're not presuming that we are going to proceed with the literal building work. We're having to wait and see, and the notice that Alan gave there earlier and indicating to us that there's a way to go. And there is a way to go on that. So we're not presuming that that is a foregone conclusion, that we're continuing to go with the building. We may have a hope of that. But whatever the situation, well, it is always good to get your house in order. We can be so focused on the task, we're not looking what's in our own hearts and treating people rightly. This was obviously a big failure here. They just were not treating people rightly. They weren't treating them fairly, generously, with mercy, but were very hard, and prepared to bring their fellows into slavery in order to get the benefit of their service and to allow themselves the luxury of their free labor. So Nehemiah was right. God would not bless their bad behavior. God would not bless their bad order. And were we hold ourselves, don't we, there before the Lord in that way to make sure that we are generous, that we continue to extend our hearts. Well, here it is, their fellow brethren, but we can apply that to fellow brethren, perhaps in other parts of the world. We think all that we've got before us to do there and all of the issues and the demands upon our finances. But it'd be sad, wouldn't it, if we still couldn't continue to be generous towards people in other places, people who will not be able to repay us. The Lord's word, wasn't it then? Luke chapter 6, if you give to those that you hope to receive something back from, what credit is that to you? Well, in a sense, we give to those who we know we're not going to get anything back from, because we want to do them good. Not that we're expecting their gift or in some way or other that they're going to repay us. They won't. They're not in a position to. And I'm sure for many of the people across the world, it's touching actually, we must print it off, just arrived, a letter in about Timothy John, who we've been supporting over in the Philippines, and his education now completed, and looking on to begin a career, and he's looking to go into the Air Force. There's the fact. Well, we'll see if he's got what he needs to do that. But, well, it's been a very modest expenditure, and it has brought, we trust there, great, great benefit to him and through him to his family. There is a source of income to his family. So fellow brethren have been helped by that, and we can think of others too. Older people there in Chennai that we seek to help in that way, and other works too. You know, Susanna out in Uganda, helping those children, kinds of hardships that they come into the world with. Providence has decreed such that their mobility is severely impaired. Well, we look still to do good, not to be hard-hearted, or in some wise they're just looking after ourselves, but caring for them. People of other cultures, dare we say, other ethnic backgrounds. Sometimes that can be a stumbling block for some, I fear. But nevertheless, we care for people of other ethnicities, other backgrounds, other cultures entirely to our own. Being hard-hearted, but merciful, because that's the nature of God. And that was our Lord's teaching, wasn't he? Merciful to the ungrateful, to the unthankful. And, well, we I'm sure many of these dear people there, were they to meet us, would give us a hearty embrace and thank us for our, well, modest sacrifice that we make to help them. But even if they can't do that, what does it matter? We nevertheless know that this is something that we have the opportunity to do good. And so we seek to do good, to be generous in that way, not to hold on unnecessarily to things that we don't need, not to be prone to selfishness. That's what's happened here with these nobles and these rulers. There's this pure selfishness, that they are just getting rich quick at the expense of others, that they are allowing the situation to remain there. They're not rising up to address it. They're not holding themselves to account in it because it's benefiting them. A horrible, ugly, self-centeredness, selfishness. So these are times, aren't they, what we do, we examine our hearts, we test our motives, we ask ourselves some probing questions. Are we self-centered? Are we selfish? Do we care? We care about other people, fellow brethren, whoever they are, wherever they live, far-flung places. So we are always to be treating people right. This was the failure here, the immediate people close to them, neighbours, in fact. They weren't treating them right at all. Their house was not in order. So we look to ensure that our house is in order. For the second heading is this, Nehemiah's rebuke. Nehemiah's rebuke, and how he is described in verse 6. He writes it himself, doesn't he? This is his own narrative. He's writing this to us. And I became very angry when I heard that outcry and these words. That was his response. He was very angry, angry that this should have happened, that the people should have been allowed to get into this situation. I guess the nobles and the rulers, the ones most in his target here, but that this should have been allowed by them to get into this situation, that they should be profiting in this way, so callous, so uncaring. And Nehemiah felt this very strongly, very strongly. It's right at times for us to feel some measure of anger. Series I'm preparing for a house party. One of the things, following in our master's footsteps, presently thinking about, hope to share the fruits of that deliberation here one day, but being angry in the right way, the right place, the right time, of the right issues. And here is Nehemiah, and he describes himself not just angry, but very angry. And one can understand it. He is incensed at what has happened. And he's incensed for the right reason. It's not to do with him. It's not to do with his situation or that he's been wronged or he's had to sell his children into slavery. He's feeling for his fellow brethren, particularly the poor. And this has galvanized him into a very strong feeling. And so we see him rebuking the people, but not after having given thought to it. And notice, again, he's very angry. But being very angry, he doesn't just speak out. He gives serious thought. Serious thought, whatever may be the strength of feeling. I fear at times we don't feel strongly enough about the things we should feel strongly about. He did hear, but he didn't just speak, because that probably would have been a disaster. That would have probably not won anybody. That's been him probably losing face by storming around, shouting at the nobles and the rulers, not winning hearts and minds. So he gives serious thought to allow the initial wave of his anger, discovery of what he has made, before he then gives some serious thought about how to proceed with it. But then, having given serious thought, he rebukes them. That is what they are to hear. I rebuked the nobles and rulers and said to them, each of you is exacting usury from his brother. And they could not argue against that. He had the facts right. He perhaps had made investigation just to check that this was so. He'd heard the outcry that reached his ears, and the people had brought this to him, recognized these people were genuine. There was really a matter here than injustice. And so the moment comes, and he doesn't care who the people are, does he? Nobles and the rulers. Oh, careful, Nehemiah. These people, if you get them the wrong side, they're going to turn against you. And we find out, don't we? Some of them already in cahoots with Tobiah. They're married into his family. They've already got sympathies towards Tobiah that they really shouldn't have. And this could go a little bit sour for Nehemiah. He could have a full-scale rebellion on his hand and find that these nobles are teaming up with the people hostile against the wall building, and he have real trouble on his hands. But he doesn't let that stop him. So sad, just reading at the moment, so sad situation. It's in America, but I fear these things can happen anywhere, can't they? But where? A situation allowed to go on in a church, reported the troubles back 2012, I think it was, and somebody put some stuff out there and said, there is trouble here, and invited people who were teamed up with this particular minister to read this stuff and draw some conclusions. One minister did, quite a well-known name, and he got on message. But most of the rest didn't, and just didn't want to know about it. The evidence was all there, and here it was, and the proof. They'd done their research, and things were going dreadfully awry in this church, and yet these people just wouldn't listen, didn't want to know, and ended up bad-mouthing the people that had brought this news to them. Well, the years passed by. We come to February of this year, and eventually the minister, it was a particular minister, resigned, great cloud, all kinds of things that have been going on. I think all the eldership have now resigned in this church. And whether the church has a future or not, well, perhaps it doesn't. So maybe it shouldn't have one in the light of this. It needs to start all over again. But we can see that the failure of the various people to have rebuked this man, they had somebody or some bodies who were, well, whatever it would be, equivalent rank or status, people that this fellow might have listened to, then the thing could have been different, that their word could have carried something, that had taken them seriously if they complained about. And these people had posted this material. They said, this is it. We're nobodies. They ain't going to listen to us. And the sad fact was they didn't listen to them. And the disaster just ripened and ripened. What perhaps might have been containable, might have been avertible. It didn't turn out that way. A lot of people ended up hurt and disappointed over it because people failed to rebuke big people, nobles and rulers. It's a big pastor, this man. Oh, you tangle with him, you'll upset this pastor and that pastor, and you'll get all these people riding into his defence, and they'll set the dogs on you, kind of thing. But Nehemiah spoke where the truth needed to be heard and was direct, and did not spare the blushes of the nobles. Yet we get the feeling that that serious thought and reflection helped him in what he said, that he didn't say more than he meant, or didn't say what he said in the wrong kind of way. And, well, they really do face it, don't they? Because next he calls a great assembly. We there read in verse 7 and then speaks to the assembly, the nobles. He's not sparing their blushes there. According to our ability, he says, we redeemed our Jewish brethren who were sold to the nations. That previous problem they had, they've sorted that. Now, indeed, will you even sell your brethren or should they be sold to us? It's often the case, isn't it? You ask people questions that are unanswerable, that of course they shouldn't have sold those brethren, and of course they shouldn't have thought of buying in the labour of those brethren as bond servants, virtual slaves to them. So what Nehemiah does is he speaks to their conscience. He speaks to their conscience. He shows them their line of duty, portrays to them, this is what you've done. This is how you've overridden your sympathies or fellow human sentiment. This is the cruelty that you have incubated within your heart, greed and the cruelty that you have acted upon. Should you not, he says, walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations, our enemies? And so he sets the lead, doesn't he? I also, with my brethren and my servants, I'm lending them money and grain. I'm going to help these people. I'm going to step in here. I'm not charging usury. I'm not going to charge interest or have their lands mortgaged to me. I'm going to offer some modest help here and lend them some help. And we'll see how that may assist them out of the difficulty that they are in. He pleads with their conscience. Harsh with them. Could have said a lot of things against them. We'll call them all kinds of things. And maybe in many ways they'd have deserved to hear it. But he doesn't do it. And he forbears from actually using such language and from being harsh in that way. And he reminds them it's important to get it right Because the nations are watching. The nations are watching. They're waiting to see what kind of people that these are. And when they learn they behave like that, they do that. Well, these ministers there, if I said to you, it involved money and over generously paying himself hefty salaries and living in lavish luxury. Well, it's the same old stuff. And it hit the national headlines, apparently, when this fellow eventually got downed and the rest of the his church, as it were, sold up on him. It was a national headline. And there the nations wait and watch to see. See how we deal with things, or don't deal with things. See how these matters get handled, or rather don't get handled, in the life of the church. The nations are watching. And it was, wasn't it, the reproach of Egypt that had to be rolled away, that the people, their wilderness wanderings, that was a reproach. And the nations were watching this disobedient company of people just wandering for 40 years before God then allowed them into the promised land and put to death all but a few of the people that had been that generation that came out. For God will not suffer his name to be dishonored among the nations. So the nations are watching. They're watching. They're watching churches. They watch us. They want to know what kind of people that we are. Do we show the right kinds of qualities? Do we, in the kind of people that we are, do we treat people rightly? And they are watching. But it's good to report, isn't it? The good outcome that the nobles and the rulers there in verse 11 and following, that they respond well. They say, we will, in verse 11 and verse 12 rather, we will restore it and will require nothing from them. We will do as you say. That's wonderful, isn't it? Would that that's the response always when people are found out on things, that they want to put this right. They actually want to act now to put this thing right, to set their house in order, to stop showing such cruelty and avarice, such lack of love and compassion, that it struck them, their conscience stricken. And Nehemiah's approach to them has, under God, produced this good outcome. And Nehemiah's a wise man. Words are fine things, but will they do what they have promised? And he very graphically there shakes out the fold of his garment and says, so may God shake out each man from his house and from his property who does not perform this promise. Even thus may he be shaken out and emptied, in verse 13. And the assembly said, amen, and praised the Lord. And we learn the people did according to the promise. The result was good. And they began to put their house in order. What are words worth? We don't actually do what they say. What are the promises that we make if we do not fulfill them? And it's good to be seen in the face of unbelievers, to be doing the right thing, so that people don't believe the worst about us, because that's what they want to do. They want to believe the worst about us. They want to be able to think ill of us. So we are grateful. This good example that they listened, Nehemiah. How many instead would have gone off in a huff? How many instead would have started plotting Nehemiah's downfall? How many would have started to make active process there to have him removed from office? So we see the carnality and spiritual behavior being put right. And then finally this, our third heading, Nehemiah's example. Nehemiah's example. Well, he himself does not exercise all the rights and all the prerogatives that previous governors had exercised. Look at how he behaves, that he wants to be above reproach. The old slogan there, and whether people still use this one, it rather got tarnished, didn't it? Because we wondered really whether it was all so true. But we're all in this together. The austerity and it's taking its impact. Well, we're all in this together. Some seem to come out of it better than others in all of that. And it seemed to be the wealthy and the rich and the bankers who still had work while the people seemed to be out of work. But if we can take that slogan at its best, we're all in this together. Nehemiah certainly did take this seriously. And his behavior in this time of austerity showed that he wanted to be seen to be doing the right thing as well and doing it from a good heart. So we see him didn't eat the provisions that he could have eaten, which are listed there in verse 14. Neither I nor my brothers ate the governor's provisions. But there were plenty of provisions which were available, and he invited a lot of people to come and actually share in those provisions. But all of those things which previous governors evidently had fattened themselves on, he didn't do. He didn't do, it says in verse 15, as previous governors had done. But he says, doesn't he, there again, that he lived in the fear of God. That's what he said to the nobles, do you not fear God? Well, Nehemiah was a man who did fear God. Could he come before God? Well, people were in famine and they were struggling, and he had been dining sumptuously, eating there, and all food and getting fat on these things. Nor did he allow his servants to be a burden to the people. He restricted their rights. He, as it were, made their portions a little smaller than what was available to them, a little less sumptuous. Neither, as we see in verse 16, did he sort of help himself. All my servants were gathered there for the work, and we didn't buy any land. We didn't get wealthy and start buying up properties. It was extraordinary how some ministers managed to do any ministry, because they're busy with portfolios and properties and buying and selling their umpteenth homes and the rest of it. They're quite incredible. I think they read this passage in Nehemiah too often, do they? We look to ourselves, that we ourselves, in whatever capacity, don't put pressures on people, be a burden to them, expect ourselves to go with things and others can go without. And so we have to ensure that our expectations and everything else are properly trimmed to the circumstances. And we should all be wanting to be like Nehemiah. We've got to answer to God. We have the fear of God. We want assurance that we didn't leave people in difficulty because of our behavior, that we didn't, as it were, extract from them or lean upon them, place burdens on people that left them weary, tired, maybe even a bit discouraged. And finally this, Nehemiah prays, doesn't he? He commits his cause to God. Well, we have the record of his behavior here, and that record is for us to follow. It's not a record that so much is just written up so Nehemiah can feel good about himself. This is for our instruction, an example to us, and his prayer, a prayer that arises from a good conscience. Well, that's a good prayer, isn't it? Lifting holy hands without disputing in 1 Timothy chapter 2, the way in which a good spirit and having done the right thing can be then a good place from which we can pray, that we have put our house in order. We've forgiven people their trespasses, when we then come to God, that we may be forgiven ours. A cry of a good conscience. And God does remember. Nehemiah's prayer is remembered. Why, it's all written here, isn't it? What he did, it's written here. And it speaks well of him, and it's held out to us as a good example. But that God does not forget the sacrifices and the diligence. God does not forget the labor that we undertake for him, things we're deprived of, deprive ourselves of, the ways in which we have at times perhaps there to tighten our belts and live with losses and crosses. God does actually remember them. So setting our house in order, well, that's a good maxim there for us, isn't it? And Nehemiah, all this work was going on, there were still matters that needed addressing and where we need to be diligent. We keep our focus on those things, our personal holiness, our walk before the Lord. These matters are not on hold while we rush around. Well, not so much rushing around at the moment. We had a fair bit of rushing around earlier in the year, but while we rush around trying to work out the building, sort out things, find out things, etc., etc., we continue to focus on what we need to focus on. The work continues. Open air ministry, preaching, teaching, and our own pursuit of personal holiness. So may the Lord help each of us, whatever may be, in our own private matters and issues, to get our own house in order for his glory.